Mr. Ashley, reel 8.
Well, apart from the boozers not being able to get in, if you weren't drunk and you did therefore get in, tell me what Aggie Weston's was like. I've no idea where it is or what it was like.
Well, it was in Commercial Road. Of course, it was bombed and hasn't been rebuilt. Oh, it was very good. I mean, you got a very good breakfast and a good clean bed.
Well, how big a place was it, and how was it sort of arranged inside?
Well, you went in, they had a restaurant on the ground floor, then they had about two or three, about 150 beds, I remember, all single cabins, we used to call them. And I think you paid about £2 a night for the cabin. And they rang a bell at 7 o'clock in the morning for everybody to get up and go down and have your breakfast, or, as I say, go along Queen Street and have your egg and milk.
What sort of people ran Aggies?
Oh, they were very good. They were very religious.
Mm-hmm.
Different to the... Of course, the best people during the First World War, were the Salvation Army. They would take you in whether a man was drunk or not. They would fix you up somewhere. They'd never see you hanging about the streets or turn you away.
Which did you prefer?
Well, I didn't like the Salvation Army. I support the Salvation Army now. I think they're wonderful people. But at that time, all the drunks, you know, they couldn't get anywhere else but in the Salvation Army. And if they got cracking at the night time and got in an argument, you might be in an argument yourself.
How did the Salvation Army place compare with Aggie's as regards its size and its facilities?
Well, the size was about the same and the facilities was just as good, but the only thing that if you had no money, they never charged you.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah, they took you in, I mean...
What could you get out of the Salvation Army without paying?
Well, you get a bed, you wouldn't possibly get a cup of tea in the morning. But most people, if they did that, you find them going back two or three nights afterwards and giving them a few bob. I mean, you can say this like that. When they're drunk, they don't know what they're doing, but once you tell them what they've done when they're sober.
Going back to Aggie's again, she was an instigator of this sort of sign the pledge business, wasn't she?
That's right, yeah.
When you went to Aggie's, did you get that sort of thing shoved down your throat a bit?
Well, no, it was all over. That you shouldn't be drinking, and drink destroys your health and all this business. Sort of smokers, like it is for smoking now, you know.
When you were in Aggies, was there any pressure put on you to sign the pledge?
Oh, no, no. But as I say, if you were the worse for wear, they wouldn't have you, and that's all about it.
Do you think Aggies was a good place for sailors?
Well, I think so, yeah. Especially for the youngers.
Yeah.
As I was in those days. I mean, I was a youngster in those days.
Now, you've told me you've given me answers to all the questions I've asked you about life in Portsmouth, but... Are there any things you want to tell me about how life was in Portsmouth for our naval rating?
No, I found it... I found I had plenty to do. I'm a great one for getting around and seeing things. I'm not one for going to the same place two or three times. If I went to one pub one night, I go to another one the next night and see what's going on.
So you think you've told me all you can about
Yes.
Right. There were a couple of minor things which I wanted to ask you about pay. I wonder, looking at the whole of your naval period of service, how you found official pay. Were you able to sort of get by on it?
Well, I wasn't, not when I was a boy. I'd always write home to my mother, providing with stamps, writing paper and envelopes, because at that time we only got 6 months a week spending money, and the rest was saved for you.
And how did you manage when you became a signalman?
Well, when I became a signalman, I managed all right, and then when I went into the submarines, what with the extra money I was getting, hydrophone list and everything, I was actually paying income tax. I was doing very well.
Do you remember at what point you had to start paying income tax?
Yes, it was when I passed my examination for a hydrophone list, and I got 2 and 6 days extra for that.
I mean, how much did you have to earn before you became liable?
Well, I think it was £1 a day. And I was getting £1 a day then.
Did you find you managed to make any regular savings from your pay?
No, not from my pay, but I made quite a lot of savings from my betting activities.
Oh, yes, I remember those. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes. Can you remember, again, looking at your whole period of service, whether the level of pay that the sailors had at the time ever caused much disgruntlement or unrest?
Well, it did amongst a lot of people. It didn't to me, because when I came out of the Navy, I had quite a bit of money saved up, what my father saved for me through the allotment. Mm. You see, you had to allot so much as a boy. So whether your mother and father send that back to you, you wasted or not, it's up to them. But my father never, he invested mine in war loans for me. I remember that.
But you remember some unrest?
Yeah, oh yes, there's quite a few. Of course, you get all types and classes, you know, joining the Navy. Some of them, I mean, never had any money before.
Yeah.
And possibly before they came in the Navy, running around with no boots and shoes on and never had good food.
Can you remember any particular occasions when there was some kind of demonstration of discontent about
not
pay?
Demonstration, but I can always remember people come up and ask you if you could lend them a few bob until the next pay. They used to pay once a fortnight every other Thursday.
I was wondering if there was any kind of actual lower deck activity to try and improve pay.
No, I've never heard anything of that whilst I was there, I must admit.
Okay. But as far as these other people were concerned...
I think, yeah, you used to say, well, if I was outside, I'd get more than this, doing the same sort of work.
So sailors were aware of that?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes. But at that time, of course, there was a lot of unemployment in the country as well.
Yeah. You came across some charitable work on for the lower deck.
Yes.
What was that?
Well, when I was in Hazard Hospital, I mean, I was operated on for appendicitis in hospital ship Plassey at sea, and 2 hours after the operation, we were we were run into and almost sank. Well, we eventually got into Firth of Forth and got put on a hospital train, and as soon as we got on there, people were coming on asking you, giving you chocolates and asking for the names and addresses of your people. Would they write to you if you wanted them to write to them for you? And that happened all the way. We went from Edinburgh to Plymouth, and no hospitals available there, and on to Portsmouth. That happened all the way down. Every time we stopped with people coming aboard the train and coming around to see you and giving you chocolates or cigarettes if you wanted them, and asked if they could write any letters or get in touch with people for you.
Were these people particular kinds of people?
Well, no, I don't know whether they were the Red Cross or not. I don't know.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. It might have been the British Red Cross, but, of course, in those days, you'd have had the number of charitable...
Yeah. These people, did they seem to be ordinary working folk?
Oh,
or
yes.
Did they seem to be sort of...
No, they seemed to be ordinary working people. They were very genuine with their...
Right. Were you a recipient of the Lady Jellicoe appeal for socks for people?
Yes, I got some from a girl in Lydney in Gloucester. I can already remember. I can't remember her name now, but it's funny enough, I was only dreaming about it a couple of nights ago and thinking about it. I don't know why.
How did that system work?
Well, I don't know. She sent this parcel and I had to get hold of it, and then we corresponded right to the time that I left the Navy and after.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of made friends, you know.
Yeah. Now, I'd like to start talking about some of your operational experiences. And starting off just before the war, one which I'd be interested in hearing details of is the commissioning of Iron Duke as a new ship. Well, what was actually involved in the commissioning?
Well, when you commission, the first thing you have to do is to fill her up with coal, which took 2 days in those days. From Colliers and brought ashore. After that, you do your speed trials in the channel. That involves about 4 days on what they call the measured miles, whatever that then might be, I don't know, but you just go up and down the channel. And then when that was satisfactory, you used to go out and, I think they used to call it swing the compass to find out the compass adjustments. And then that was all finished. We went to Bantry Bay to carry out gunnery trials.
Now, at the various stages of commissioning, are there any little incidences that occurred that...
No, only the colony ship was the one that killed me, nearly.
What happened?
Well, I had to go. I mean, the first time I've been on the ship in my life, and I'm called about for 48 hours.
Well, describe that procedure in a bit of detail.
Well, you went, you put on the oldest clothes you had, and you had to go around, and as the coal came on board, you had to pick it up and take it round and put it down a bunker into the smoke hole. And that went on until the ship was absolutely full up with coal. Then after all that, you had to queue up for a bath and get yourself clean and something to eat.
What was the worst part of coaling?
Well, I think it was getting the coal from the colliery down into the stoke of the ship.
Now, why was that so bad?
Well, because it's getting filthy all the time. I haven't been used to all this dirt and hard work, pushing sacks of coal around.
Now, when, to go on a bit, 1914 was the spectacular Spithead Review. Could you give me a description of your memories of that whole event? What, as far as it affected Iron Duke, do the whole thing.
I know we were the head of one line because we carried the flagship of Admiral Callington, I think it was then. Angelica hadn't joined the ship.
Callington?
Callaghan. Admiral
Callingham.
Callingham, I think it was.
All right.
Because he'd taken over from Prince Louis of Battenberg.
Yes.
Admiral Cunningham, this was the one. I know we were the head of the line of all the home fleet, as it was there, until the war started, which was called the Grand Fleet. And all the other fleets of the other navies were there, all in line at Spithead. I remember the Royal Yacht going round, all the between the lines, and us having to stand there and cheer. And I remember on the Friday night, the firework display, given by all the ships, but after that, my memories.
Were there any incidences during the Spithead Review that stick in your mind?
No, the only one I can remember is when Winston Churchill came on board, and I was on wishing I didn't know him. He was the First Lord of the Admiralty.
Yeah. Anything to say about that?
Well, the only time I got put in the report, I couldn't report him coming aboard, and I didn't know him.
Now, when war broke out in August 14, I know because I've spoken to a lot of army personnel that on the whole the way the army reacted to the outbreak of war was with great excitement and great enthusiasm, and they were really looking forward to it and thought it would be over in a few weeks. Do you have any views on the attitude of the lower deck?
As far as I can remember, all I used to hear was, well, once we get the Germans out, we'll see them off and get the war finished with. They never came out. That was the trouble. Oh, we were full of enthusiasm. I said there was no one wanted to pack up the navy and go home. I mean, war was inevitable, and we were in it.
Now, after war had broken out, what can you remember about Iron Duke and taking up war stations?
No, I remember everybody was recalled from leave. One watch was on leave, and they were all recalled from leave. And they rejoined the ship at Portsmouth, and we left on the first day war was declared for Rosyth. And there, Admiral Callaghan went ashore, and we picked up Admiral Jellicoe.
And Iron Duke became Jellicoe's flag fleet.
And then the fleet came known as the Grand Fleet.
Yes.